Nations are not communities and never have been. The history of any nation, presented as the history of a family, conceals the fierce conflict of interests, sometimes exploding, often repressed, between conquerors and conquered, masters and slaves, capitalists and workers, dominators and dominated, and between race and sex. And in such a world of conflict, a world of victims and executioners, it is the job of thinking people not to be on the side of the executioners. And that quote comes from Howard Zinn. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. And folks, right here at the start of the show, I would very much like to offer my most sincere thanks to all of those Facebook friends of mine who have donated to help my son, who is currently in a period of crisis. Unfortunately, my son was caught in the floods in Bundaberg, Queensland, Australia last week, and managed to escape the waters bearing his laptop, his monitor, two changes of clothes, and three books, and has lost everything else that he owns in the floodwaters. He's lost two computers, he's lost all of his clothes, all of his furniture, his car, his guitar, all of his games and CDs and personal effects and basically everything that he had in his life to that point. He's 19 years old and he has Asperger's syndrome, and so he feels very much like a fish out of water when he's not in familiar surroundings. His familiarity of his surroundings was very much his stability in life, but now he's lost that. And I did post the email address that is attached to his PayPal on Facebook, and I asked anybody who was considering donating to the Crow House to please donate to my son, and I would like to thank all those who did. The response was overwhelming. He actually got $1,045 in donations since I made that post. And he spoke to me this morning, and I could hear the joy in his voice, which was changed so much from the despair and anguish that I heard in his voice the day before. He is overwhelmed that so many people that he has never met would offer him assistance. He has asked me to pass on his most sincere thanks to you all, and I myself would especially like to thank each and every one of you who donated from the bottom of my heart. It was very, very wonderful of you all to do so, and it really showed him that things are not always as bad as they seem. And it's now inspired him with the confidence he needs to move forward. And again, folks, I cannot thank you enough. This is my son, and you have very much helped with your contributions. And so you all have my most sincere blessings for your actions. And it very much seems to be a time of change and a time of new beginnings for many people in the world today, not just my son. In fact, the floods that have dispossessed my son seem to be almost mirrored in other aspects of reality at the moment. They seem to be mirrored in the economy. They seem to be mirrored in the political situations around the planet. And I've seen many people, it's remarkable actually, how many people that I know at the moment who are going through a period of transition. There's many people that I know that are selling their lands and moving overseas. Many people are just shifting away from certain areas. Many people are being uprooted in many ways, both emotionally and physically, financially. There's all sorts of change going on, and even myself being forced to move from the property that I've been living on for the last 3.5 years. All of this transitional stuff seems to be happening, and many people seem to be being pushed towards transition, a transition that they didn't really expect. Many people have been given the opportunity to remove themselves of the clutter in their life. That's what I'm actually seeing this move of mine as, folks. I mean, I've been offered places where I could stay around here. I've actually been offered places all over the world, which has been amazing, absolutely incredible. I've been offered places in this country, in Victoria, and places overseas. I've been offered places everywhere from people, which is hugely inspiring. But the interesting thing is that there aren't really many places around where I live. I have been offered a rental, a share accommodation with someone who lives not too far from me. But what I'm feeling is I'm being given an opportunity here to remove myself of much of the clutter that I've built up by living in one spot for 3.5 years. So I think I'm going to sell off most of what I own and store the rest at a friend's place and maybe just cast myself to the wind for a little while and see where I end up. Because I feel there is just something happening which is telling me to stay transient for a while. Plus, I have the Full Circle project happening this year, later this year, and I really can't see the point in going and organising a place to live and setting it all up when I'm actually going to be probably travelling for a good portion of the year. So I'll probably do that, folks. I'll probably just take this opportunity to remove myself of the clutter that I'm feeling around me and seeing around me and just throw myself to the wind for a little while. And this is exactly what I'm seeing with other people. People are being given an opportunity to remove themselves of their clutter, or their clutter is simply being taken from them, as in the case of my son. Even the person whose land that I'm staying on here, where I've been for the last 3.5 years, he's been here for 16 or 17 years, and he has some incredible clutter. This is a 52-acre property, and it has 3 sheds full of clutter. And these aren't just normal size sheds, folks. These are quite big farm sheds. One of them is actually the size of a warehouse. He's got things such as a 73-foot yacht hull that he bought a few years ago. He's got another boat. He's got a couple of semi-trailers. He's got shipping containers. He's got piles and stacks of timber. He's got a pile of 10,000 old soda bottles. And it just goes on and on, folks. Water tanks, old petrol bowsers, old bottling equipment from the 1920s, stacks of timber and caravans and trucks, and I have no real idea how many cars and vans there may be lying around the property, many of them in working condition. Just next to my cabin there is an old concrete tower. This is a tower that sits in a concrete depot and is used to fill up cement mixers. Every home should have one. He's got some pretty amazing stuff kicking around the place. He bought the old pylons from the Sydney Pier when it was pulled down. So he's got these 150-year-old round logs, these huge pylons covered in barnacles and absolutely amazing pieces of wood and very, very old and very, very water-stained and an incredible amount of character. I mean, you'd love to build a house out of these things, you know. He's got so much stuff lying around that he's just bought because he figured he'd use it one day. And now he's being forced to move, so I can see him also being given an opportunity to remove himself of the clutter in his life. It just seems to be happening everywhere, folks. Almost everybody I know is removing themselves of clutter. So I think we're heading for a period where it's going to be best if you can just pick up and move and not really have too much attachment to things, because I think we're going to see a lot of changes this year. And it's happening globally, it really is. The situation in the United States is a good example of this, with this attack against the Second Amendment, Sandy Hook, and all the stuff that's gone on with that. We're seeing massive changes in Palestine as well. We're seeing this merging almost of Fatah and Hamas. These two rival factions are starting to get on quite amicably, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes. But I think it's happening everywhere, folks. It really is. I'm seeing so many people being put in a position where they are forced to remove themselves of their clutter, or at least given signs that perhaps it is time to remove themselves of their clutter. And I would suggest, folks, if you're out there and you've got stuff kicking around that you just don't use and you've got no real need for, perhaps it's time to get rid of these things in your life. Perhaps it's time for you to work out what's really valuable in your life, which really is your health and your loved ones, the things that really matter to you, and create close ties to these things and start losing attachment for personal possessions, because I think we are going to see some huge changes this year, folks. And when you suddenly get removed of everything you own, it can send many people into shock and send them spiraling down a passage into darkness. But really, it's who you are that defines you. It's not defined by what you own. It's defined by who you are and what is in your heart. And so losing your possessions, if looked at from the right perspective, it's almost a very freeing experience. And this is what I'm hoping my son will see. I'm hoping my son will see the experience that he's just had as a good reason why is not to place too much attachment on physical possessions, because physical possessions don't really mean anything. They don't make you who you are. You are still who you are. And ultimately, all you've ever got to really fall back on is yourself. And so that's what you need. You need to know yourself. You need to respect yourself, and you need to understand what is important in life, what is important in life is yourself and what you do with the time that's given to yourself, how you interact with reality around you. That's what's important. It's also been very gratifying to see some of the very, very staunch friends my son has had in Bundaberg. All of his friends have very much rallied to his side and rallied to his support. And even though they can't get across the river from where he is still, the bridges are all out, he still can't get across to the other side of town where he lives. He's even had a friend offer to go the long way, which is a very long way, around to the other side of town to pick him up and take him back. And the trip for them to do that is around about 100 miles. So one of his friends has actually driven the 100 miles around to his house and picked him up this morning, and they're in the process now of driving the 100-mile trip back to Bundaberg so that he can go and salvage what he can from his house. He's hoping that some of the more robust objects might still be okay. Had a couple of hand-carved masks and a few things like that. But what I see in this whole situation, folks, is an opportunity at a very early age for my son to understand that it's not about physical possessions. That's not what life is about. What life is about is you and what you do with that time. But again, folks, I'm seeing this all over the place. I'm hearing from people all over the world that are going through transitionary periods and are being told by whatever force you would call it to be that it's time for them to remove the clutter from their lives. A time to lose attachment, a time to place faith in yourself rather than on those possessions you have around you that you believe define yourself, because they don't. You are really defined by what's in your heart, folks. It isn't about the stuff that's around you, it's about you. And I would suggest if you're someone out there and you're going through something like this, take solace in knowing that this is a global phenomenon. It's happening to almost everybody that I know. I think what we're seeing here, folks, I think we're seeing a real push and a real opportunity for people to get out of their left brain. You know, humankind is really going through a transitionary period. It's absolutely obvious. It could go in a very bad direction or it could go in a very good direction. It all really comes down to what we choose, how we choose to participate in it. Now, we could all end up being dispossessed by the corrupt criminals that run our governments, but again, it's our choice as to whether we choose to do that. It's our choice as to whether we choose to obey corporate rules that don't really apply to us unless we contract to them. It's our choice as to whether we allow our trustees to dispossess us or whether we choose to stand in the power that we have, to respect ourselves, to respect those around us. It really is. And I think that we've been given this choice for a long time. It's been there waiting for us to embrace, but we haven't embraced the opportunity. We've just let it sit there and we haven't done anything about it. And so the world has continued to degrade and continued to get worse and worse. It's got harder and harder. People have been placed in more shortage and more shortage and have become more and more dispossessed. And in all of these cases, it's like reality is pushing you to wake up. It's pushing you to make the choice to stand in your power. And if you don't make that choice, if you just choose to be discarded, well, fine, you'll be discarded. That's the way it goes. But you have the choice not to be discarded. You have the choice to assume responsibility for your own life. You have the choice to assume the position that you should hold in the food chain, in the social hierarchy. And that is mankind. And everything below you is fiction. Everything we created, it's all fiction. The whole system, it's fiction. The whole political system, the whole concept of government, it's all fiction. We made it all up. We wrote it down in books and people went along with it. That's all it is. And we created this system to service our needs. But if it is no longer doing so, if it is now milking the wealth of the planet and transferring it into private hands and destroying our world while it does it, then obviously it's time for us to stand up, take responsibility, and to implement a new system. And I believe that system should be based not on the external technology that we hold so dear, but on the inner technology that we have been led away from, and that in many cases we have forgotten exists. But it does exist, folks. It's there inside you. You do have inner technology. You are capable of much, much more than you may believe possible. And this is not active in your body now because of a chemical dumbing down that you've been subject to, a chemical modification, a biological control system that's been put in place. Because by subjecting humankind to all of the toxins and pollutants and electromagnetic interference and GM food and all the stuff that is in our environment now, it has changed our biology and it has reduced the operating system of each of us to about 3% of its actual capability. It's like you're running a Windows computer, folks, and you're only using 3% of your CPU, 3% of your RAM, and 3% of your hard drive. The rest of it is there, but you just don't know how to access it. That's what it's like. It's like you're driving a car, but the motor only functions to 3% of its capability, the steering wheel only operates to 3% of what it should, and the brakes only work to 3% of their capability. It's like that, folks. If you were driving a car like that, you would say, well, this car is inoperative. It's not usable. And yet that is what our biology has been reduced to due to the system and the toxins that have been put into our environment. And yet we just go along like nothing's the matter. But really what we are currently doing is each of us is driving a mechanism which is virtually inoperative. And that's what our bodies are. Because our endocrine system has been shut down, because our DNA is so locked off, because we're only using half our brain, because our pineal gland is closed, we are only operating to 3% of our capability. And I was talking to someone actually on a radio show the other day, someone from the Venus Project. We were having quite a very amicable discussion, actually. It was on a show with a man called Aaron Hawkins. He has a YouTube channel called Storm Clouds Gathering. I can't actually remember the name of the show offhand, but it was really good to actually sit down and have a discussion with some people who come from such diverse backgrounds and have such a diverse beliefs. And it was really good to sit down and talk with someone who is an advocate of the Venus Project. And what I attempted to explain to him was that I don't really agree with civilization at all. I don't think we need civilization. I think we do in our current form because we are only operating to 3% of our capability. And so we need a system which will look after us. We kind of need a mummy and daddy because we're not working very well at the moment. But my argument is that if you could get the government that we currently have, or you could make changes to this system that we currently have to the extent that this system would allow you to build something like the Venus Project, then I believe that if during that process we got rid of all of the toxins from our environment, all of the GM food, all of the fluoride out of the water, and all the electromagnetic pollution that we're swimming in, then by the time we had built the Venus Project, we would discover that we didn't actually need it, that we didn't actually need a system at all, because we would come back online and we would discover all of the inner technology that we had and we would be living in a completely different reality. And he said to me, well, sure, that's great. If you believe that we have the potential to do that and you're willing to wait to a time where we have evolved enough to use all of these higher senses, then that's fine, but I'm not willing to wait that long. And what I had to attempt to explain to him then, that it's not a case of evolving to that point. It's a case that we have been devolved to the point that we are currently at. Because we have the capability of everything I've described to you, and much, much more. Because we have the capability to be operating with 90% more interactivity in reality than what we currently have. Simply by allowing our inner technology to come back online. So it isn't a matter of evolution. It's a matter of simply being allowed to be all that we could be. And I think it's very important that people understand the difference in the two perspectives. And I know these things are possible, folks, because I've experienced them myself. I've experienced things in meditation. I've experienced things during ceremony. And I've lived my life in a particular way that has shown me that you can manifest reality. You can manifest things that you want. You can simply have things work out if you're prepared to listen to your intuition and to follow synchronicity. I've had experience that have explained to me what higher senses are and what instincts are and how we should all have the instincts that animals have, the instincts that native cultures have. And the only thing that stops us having these things is the westernization of our societies, the fact that we're always walking on flat floors and having square walls and smooth surfaces and we're eating toxic food and living in toxic environments, all of the things that have been used to disconnect us from nature and disconnect us from ourselves and disconnect us from reality. Once you take all of these things out of our lives, then we will start to become active again by default. It is not a point of having to evolve to that point. I know that we are capable of these things already. And that's why I have in the last few months mentioned ceremony so much to you on the show, and I have often suggested that many people should go and do ceremony and perhaps experience things such as ayahuasca, which will show them these realms and open up these instincts in them and show them what they are really capable of, because we are truly capable of much, much more, my friends. It's all on your perspective of how we deal with this, but I think we're going to have to deal with it this year, folks. I think it's all coming to a head, and we're being provided with more and more opportunities to step into our power and to face this system and to rectify the problems that we face. But I think it's all going to be very transient, and I think we are going to be in for some major changes and possibly what people would call major upheavals this year. And it's very advisable for people to just lose attachment to stuff, because it's not about stuff, it's about you. It's about what we do with the world. And I think we're being given an opportunity to shift into a completely new reality if we embrace the experience in the right way. When things change, just try to find the silver lining and believe in yourself. Always believe in yourself. And I think we will find the higher ground. I think there's going to be a lot of conflict started this year. I really think the powers that be are going to push a lot of stuff, but I believe that what we are going to see is possibly what happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object, and the outcome could be anybody's guess. I really do think it's going to be positive, though, because I think whatever happens, even if it all turns to muck and falls down and we pick ourselves up from the rubble, I still think it's going to improve our heart space. It's going to improve who and what we are, and it's all going to provide much needed opportunities for change and much needed opportunities to build a better world. And this system probably has to collapse and fall down in a pit of chaos, because you never know, folks, anything we're going to do and any return to what we should be will probably have to be built from the ground up and from the bottom up, cell by cell, consciousness by consciousness, individual by individual. And perhaps it's going to take a crisis. Perhaps it's going to take a huge collapse for people to suddenly start respecting each other. Very often people come together in times of crisis, and it's a shame that we need times of crisis for that to happen. But very often they do, and perhaps that's what we're being provided with. Perhaps that's what this is. Perhaps we need the crisis so we can learn to pick ourselves up again and learn to respect each other again. The world works in mysterious ways, folks, and perhaps that way isn't really quite so mysterious. I mean, if we're not going to take the opportunity in times of peace and in times of comfort, then perhaps we have to be put into a time of discomfort so that we realize that the opportunity is there. Personally, I've always known that it's there. I've always hoped that humankind would pick up the torch with me and simply embrace the new reality that is right there at our fingertips, should we choose to create it. And that's what I've been attempting to do with these shows, folks, right since the beginning. I've just been attempting to help people see the power in themselves and realize that we can change things. We could move this reality into a completely different direction if we simply took control of our governments again and realize that these people are just trustees. We don't have to do what they say. All we have to do is to respect ourselves and respect others. You know, if you respect yourself and you respect others, that's really all it takes, folks, because once we do that, this system will change by default, because there will be no place for a system such as this to exist within a heart that's pure. And in the mind of the individual who has a pure heart, they will simply not participate in this system by default, because to participate in it is really an act of disrespect, not just towards reality and towards the people around you, but also towards yourself and towards your children. I've said very often on the shows that it really does come down to respect, folks. And ultimately, it really comes down to how much you respect yourself. That's what's key in the whole thing, because it isn't until you respect yourself that you can respect others and see others as valid. And we are all the same. We are literally all the same, folks. Biologically, we're all the same. I mean, sure, there are some members of society who are more than a little psychopathic, and it may be difficult for you to identify with these people to see their perspectives as valid. But I guess from a psychopathic perspective, their perspective is valid. I can see why they feel that way and why they do the things they do. It's because they're psychopaths. That doesn't mean that I have to give them control over myself. But still, I'm just not the type of person that wants to hurt these people. I just want them to go away and stop trying to control my life. And I don't think it's a matter of revenge. I mean, sure, if there's a psychopath that is creating havoc and people are dying and the world is in chaos because of the actions of this individual, then it may be necessary to curtail those actions by whatever means necessary. But that doesn't mean I hate these people. That doesn't mean I want to attack or hurt these people. It simply means that I'm prepared to do that which is necessary. So it isn't that I'm a pacifist by any sense of the word, and it isn't that I'm telling you to be pacifists, nor am I telling you to turn the other cheek and to simply think the world is going to change by changing your energetic state. All I'm suggesting is that you be in the correct energetic state in all that you do. And if you are in a position where you need to exercise force to repel an attack against you, then by all means exercise whatever force is necessary. But it's important that you don't do it with hatred in your heart. It's far more powerful to be repelling an attacker out of love for your family and love for yourself and love for those whom you are protecting than it is to do so in a state of hatred and anger towards the perpetrator. When you do that and when you put yourself in that energetic state, you're simply feeding the negative energy that already exists in the field. Whereas if you repel such an attack out of love and out of a pure need to do so, but with no malicious intent, then you create an incredibly powerful force. And that's the way situations should always be approached. And even if America was to come to a situation where perhaps it was facing civil war, that is how the situation should be approached. And I believe that's the way it was approached in the first American War of Independence. These people weren't simply repelling the Redcoats because they hated them. They were repelling them because of the love they had for their families and their need to stand up for that which is right. And there is an extremely important difference between the two perspectives. But I think it's break time here, folks, so I'll leave it there for now. Thank you for joining me on the show today, and I will speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You know, when you look at the world, it really is amazing to see sometimes. I mean, it's amazing to see just how the people squabble, how the people fight, and to see how disconnected many people are from reality. You know, you sit here behind your computer and you think, yes, the world is changing and I'm seeing a positive effect. But when you actually go out and look at the world, it's very, very chaotic. But in amongst it, you still find this all-pervasive feeling that something good could happen and that change is on the horizon. What I've attempted to do is to help people realize that it is true, there is hope there and there is change on the horizon and good can happen, but it takes participation. And many people will say, well, how do I participate, Max? What is something tangible that I can do? How do I get my hands dirty? I want to go out there and I want to do something. I want to get up in the morning, leave the house and go and do something that changes the world. What do I do? And really, folks, what you can do is when you do go outside and you approach the world, which you do every day, you are already in a position to get your hands on the situation and to bring about positive change. And all it takes is for you to lead by example in all that you do for that day. Lead by example in how you interact with people, how you approach every situation that you're in. Lead by example in the form of energy that you put into the field. Do what is right in all that you do. Follow your path of Dharma. Do the right thing in the right way at the right time for the right reason. Treat people as yourself and respect yourself and respect others. You know, that simple action, if everybody did it, that would change the world by default. And often I've said this to people, you know, you should start giving more. And they say, well, I will once everybody else does. And so everybody thinks that way. And so it never gets done because no one is prepared to start. No one is prepared to really lead by example in what they do. And that's why the schism in human consciousness remains. That's why we spend our days battling not only each other, but also ourselves. We've forgotten how to give. And really, when you look at it, it goes deeper than that, because it isn't just that we've forgotten how to give. It's that the system that we serve has removed us of our ability to be able to give. Very often it's done this because it's placed an economic value on everybody and everything that we do, and has placed all of mankind in a manufactured state of perpetual scarcity. And this has caused us to always have to compete with each other for the bottom line, compete with each other for paper. We can't give to people because everything has value. And if I give to you, then I may be putting myself in a state of shortage down the line, because we live in a reality where I have to have a certain amount of stuff in order to pay to be alive. So you see, it's the imposition of this economic model over human consciousness, and it's the way the system has imposed an economic value over everything and every action and the whole concept that time even is money, that has ultimately placed this schism in human consciousness. It's removed us of our natural desire to give to each other. Because we do. I think we're very giving creatures naturally. And you know this, folks, because when you give to someone, it feels so good. You get that feeling inside, that warm, fuzzy feeling when you've given to someone. You see the joy on their face, and you see the energy that they go into and the feeling that they get because you gave to them. And it makes you feel good. It's a massive influx of energy into your own life, simply in the act of giving to another. And we've had that taken away from us. And we've had an economic value placed over every action and everything that we do. Every object in reality, every blade of grass, every tree, everything is measured by its economic value. You can have a storm go through an area and devastate a forest, and the government will tell you it did $3 billion worth of damage. But how can you put a $3 billion value on this? It's a forest. It's only valued by its economic value, the value of the timber where it milled, the cost of the repair job to the man-made fences that we may have put in the area, and the power poles and the things that we constructed. So we put a monetary value, an economic value on everything, on all life, when really economics and money is about as far removed from life and liberty and justice and freedom and reality as you could get. It's a man-made construct designed specifically to place people into scarcity and to remove us of the ability to give to each other, which is our natural thing for us to do, and also to remove us from our natural state of abundance, which is where we would be without the imposition of a monetary system. And look, in many ways, perhaps having money isn't so bad. I mean, if we are going to live in a society and have civilization such as what we've got or anything like what we've got, sure, I can understand that we may wish to use something to pass around to each other to use as a medium of exchange. So it isn't that money is inherently bad in itself. It's just that the money system that we've got is based on interest-bearing debt and is designed specifically to place people in scarcity. That's the problem, folks. It's the system itself. But again, I think that once we rein this system in and we steer it back in a decent direction and get things going back on the right track so that we move back towards what we should be as humanity and what we should be as mankind, I think the need for money, the need for civilization, the need for government, I think all of these things will fade away. I really do. I think these are constructs that do not serve mankind in any way at all. In fact, I think they are specifically designed to imprison and enslave mankind in very, very methodical and very deliberate ways. You know, there really has been so much done to us, folks. There's been so much of ourselves that's been taken from us, so much knowledge about ourselves that's been taken from us, so much knowledge of history that's been taken from us. We really don't know much history at all. I mean, we know what we've got in books, but what's written in those books is simply what was written there by scholars. We don't know. We weren't there. We didn't live it. And history is always written by the winners. And then we have other scholars come along and they copy the books of other scholars and they add their interpretation to it, and you end up with all these books that give you theories on what may have happened. And really, that's ultimately all we have, folks. We have theories on what may have happened, and we have accounts that have been left behind for us on papyrus scrolls and stone tablets and certain other mediums that people have found to leave messages for us. But the printing press, I mean, this has only been around for a short while. It's not like it's something that's always existed. So the myriad of books we've got now really haven't been around for a long time. And many of them are simply people's theories and interpretations on history and their interpretations on reality based on what information they've had available to them and how they've interpreted that information. So you have to wonder, how much of history do we really know? How much of ourselves do we really know? How much do we really know to be true? How much do we really know to be possible? Because in regards to history, well, history is written by the winners. And in regard to science, well, that's a very closed shop. It's a very closed field. It's a very left brain. And it doesn't take 97% of reality into account. So if you're doing experiments and you're not taking 97% of reality into account, then perhaps the outcome of these experiments may not be exactly what you're perceiving it to be. And this can be clearly seen when they decided to try to measure the mass of the universe and they compressed it all down into a 1 centimeter squared cube and they found out that 97% of it was missing, or 98% of the universe was missing, and so they invented dark matter to fill up the empty space. And people like Stephen Hawking, they talk about dark matter and how dark matter must be there because that's the only thing that explains the missing parts of the universe. But folks, it's not just that there's parts missing, it's that there's 98% of the universe missing. Okay, that's not a small part. You can't just sweep that under the rug. That's a lot of universe to be missing. And what I've been attempting to explain to people is that the result of this missing universe is a result of our perceptions being shut down. It's there, we just can't perceive it because we don't know how to interact with it, because 97% of our DNA is shut down. And so we're missing out on 98% of the universe. It's simply that we're unable to interact with reality on an energetic level. We're unable to interact with reality using what I term to be higher senses. You see, the information is there. It's there all around you. The interaction that you could have with the energy field around you, the interaction you could have with the earth and the plants and with nature and with everything, with all creation, it's there. And that interaction is taking place all the time. The information is flowing. It's just that you don't know you're speaking those languages. And so you don't know how to decode the information. And it's the same with the universe. The other 98% of the universe is there. It's just that you don't experience it because you don't know how to decode it. And it isn't even that you don't know how to decode it. That's the point, really. The point is that you're incapable of decoding it because of changes that have been made to human biology, which prevent us from accessing those higher realms, because our DNA is not functioning properly. And we're only using half our brain, all of the things that I've previously gone through. So therefore we're locked in a prison, essentially, of the mind, and we're kept here via word magic and via a belief system, which we've chosen to take on board. Because when we take on the mainstream version of history, we take on the mainstream version of science, we take on the mainstream explanation of how reality works, then we take on that belief system. But it's not something that we discovered on our own. It's not something that we know within our hearts. It's something that we've been taught to know. You see, we only know that which we are taught to know. And if we are attempting to explain reality, we don't ever attempt to explain it through our heart space. We always attempt to explain it by making it fit within parameters that have been provided for us in a book somewhere. So therefore what we're doing is we're taking on someone else's belief system and we're using that as the boundaries with which to constrain our own. And this is what I mean when I often say that people are enslaved to the written word and they live in a language-based reality. They live in a word matrix. It's word magic, folks. Everything that keeps us locked into this reality is word magic. It's because we only think with our left brain, we only think in language, and our language has always locked us within parameters and belief systems which are not ours. They're things and ideas and concepts and beliefs that have been handed down to us and instilled into us, but they're not that which we know within our hearts. And when we can find that knowing in our hearts, that's how to really know things, and that's how to really interact with the world around you. And I hope that made sense. You know, I admit that a lot of the concepts that I cover on these shows may seem very esoteric and unusual to a lot of people. Many people require a scientific explanation for everything they do and everything they experience. But I truly believe there is far more to existence than a normal, constrained, left-brain scientific explanation. Some of the stuff that I've experienced in my life and in my travels has been truly remarkable. And the way I've learnt to interact with reality around me has been a real eye-opener, even for me. I've learnt things about myself and things about reality and things about other people and things about all creation that I never dreamed I could know. And I've done it by changing my perspective. And I've discovered that that which you know is often far more important than that which you believe or that which you think is possible, that which you've gained from books. I mean, many people believe knowledge is wisdom, but knowledge is not wisdom. Knowledge can be intellectualism, and intellectualism can be gained from books. But again, books are very often simply a process of taking on someone else's belief system and making it your own, and not looking for the knowing within yourself. Very often when we read books, we find points that resonate with ourselves and resonate with us, and this is very often because they reinforce our belief systems. And then what we do is we look for more books that continue to reinforce this same belief system. Often we have belief systems that are unshakable, and we will not allow change to come into our lives because we have constructed such a workable system for ourselves. But really, very often it's just a system. Very often it's a system that people will use as a security blanket to insulate themselves from reality, to insulate themselves from any thought which may disturb or interfere with what they believe is possible and what they believe reality should be. Very often people create a construct of themselves in their mind, and they always try to adhere to that construct. And from that construct, they create a facade that they then show to the world around them and show to the other people they come in contact with. Very often they're afraid to be themselves, and they're often repulsed and disgusted and judgmental when they see someone else as they really are. And all these things are constructs of the mind designed to insulate us from ourselves. And I think we have to move past that. I think this is the time we're being given to do it, and I think that's what we're going to see coming out of this year, coming through this transitionary period that we are currently in. And as I've said, it is very much a transitionary period. I'm literally seeing it everywhere I go, and all the people that I've spoken to have all told me that they're going through periods of transition, going through periods where they're either thinking about changing and bringing about change of their own accord, or they're being forced to change. Reality is just manipulating itself in such a way that it's bringing change into their lives, whether they want it or not. And I'm seeing a lot of people really embracing this change in a positive way. I'm seeing a lot of people realize the need for change. I mean, we certainly can't go on the way we have been. But one of the most beautiful parts about it is that I've also seen people sort of throwing caution to the wind, in a manner of speaking, and just realizing that if they throw themselves into the world, things may just work out and the world may just do the right thing by them. There was a wonderful quote that I had featured on the website a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember who made it, but the quote said that when you surrender to the wind, you can ride it. And I think that's a wonderful quote. It really does encapsulate the sort of mood that I've been feeling lately and the type of message that I've been hoping to convey with this show. I guess what I'm really attempting to say here is don't get too caught up in things, folks. Don't always dive down rabbit holes and read the spy novel of reality at the expense of yourself. I mean, it's okay to look down these rabbit holes and it's nice to know what's going on. But try not to fixate on little details that you'll never answer. Instead, try to see the bigger picture and try to see what the solutions to our problems are. I mean, even if you're going to address things on a political level, or you're going to march in the street, join the Occupy movement, or whatever you're going to do, it's not going to work if you're not in the right heart space. It's not going to work unless you know who you are and you respect the people around you. It's not going to work unless you do those things. You have to respect yourself. You must always be doing what you're doing because of love and service to creation. Don't do what you do out of anger and hatred. If you're forced into a position of civil war, don't fight the war from anger or hatred. Fight it from a perspective of love. Do what needs to be done and do what is necessary to maintain a viable future for life on this planet. But don't do it out of hatred. when you do things from a perspective of hatred and malice and revenge, it's just bad energy. It just creates more of the same. You literally become that which you are fighting against. Perhaps it's a trait that we can all become slightly psychopathic in times of crisis if we're forced into that situation. We can all become a murderer. We can all become very angry. We can all do a lot of damage to other people if given the right opportunity to do so. But it's what we do with that. It's what we do with these opportunities, folks. And I really believe that if we just turn around and start helping each other and start respecting each other, then things will change. Things will change very, very simply. I was hoping coal seam gas would bring the people together on this front, but unfortunately what I'm seeing is people are still fighting and arguing about it. They're still trying to fight the system. They're not realizing that the system is fiction, that they don't have to fight the system, that they only give it power when they fight within those rules and parameters that the system provides. We don't have to do that. We can step above it. We can realize that we made the whole thing up, and that which we created cannot control us unless we allow it to control us. There are people here in Australia that are doing things and taking on their local councils. I was actually going to have a lady on to speak to you this week, but there was a little bit of a mix-up with the time that was set for the interview, and we've had a lot on. She's had a lot on down where she is in Victoria, and I've had a lot to deal with up here with the floods and the situation my son is in. And the power has been out to a lot of areas around here. We had 33,000 homes without power. I think there are still around about 5,000 homes without power now, and the storm actually finished 2 or 3 days ago. So it's still an ongoing process in this area. So it's just been hard to put it together. But I do intend to have her on next week to talk about the ongoing action she has with a local council in Victoria. And perhaps we will be able to offer some steps that people can use to address these situations in their own area. What we're seeing here in Australia is a very dangerous situation at the moment. We're seeing a referendum being put on the table in an attempt to again give local governments constitutional recognition. This would essentially grant local councils the equalisation of powers, and this is a very, very dangerous thing to do. We've had at least 2 referendums on this issue in the past, and we voted no each time. We had one in 1977, I think we had another one in 1988, and we voted no each time, but the government just keeps pushing. They push, they don't get it through, so they put more toxins and chemicals in society and introduce more video games and more mobile phones and get people more and more distracted with rubbish television shows and lead people more away from themselves, and then they try again. And eventually they figure they'll probably get society dumbed down and disconnected from reality enough that they'll actually vote yes on any issue. So they just keep pushing these same things, folks. But they always disguise it to look like something that it isn't. What they're saying in this referendum, and I'm saying this for the benefit of any Australians who may be listening, but what they are saying in this referendum is that we need to grant constitutional recognition to local councils, and the councils are saying, yes, yes, we really need this because this will give us access to federal funding. And that's going to be good for the area because we'll have more money that we can spend on you. That's the way they're presenting it. But really, it isn't about that at all. And if you look, you will find that local councils actually already receive federal funding. So that's a barefaced lie to begin with. And what the issue is really about and what they're really attempting to slip under the carpet with this is they want to add some legal clout to bylaws that are made by councils. Because at the moment, bylaws that are made by councils actually have no legal value. You don't actually have to go along with anything they say, no matter how much they trick you to believe that you do. But what I'm attempting to say here is that it's very, very important to realize that it is a very, very dangerous thing to do, to give constitutional recognition and the equalization of powers to local councils, because this will effectively remove the need for lawmaking from the state governments and federal governments. It will essentially put the creation of laws in the hands of local councils. So you'll have 6 people making up bylaws in their area, which will actually be seen as law. There will be no congressional oversight, no upper and lower house, no scrutiny of the law to see whether it is a viable law. It will simply be one person saying, hey, let's do this, and the other 5 people in the room voting yes because it's going to be good for them, and that's it. It's now a law. And if they get away with this, then this will give local councils the ability to milk the resources of this country district by district, suburb by suburb, and household by household. And that's the plan. Because once they do this, if they get away with it, then you can approach federal government or state government and ask them to effect change for some of the hardship that you're in. And they will simply say, well, that's a local government. That's a council issue. You need to go and approach your council. And of course, if you approach the council, they'll tell you it has to be done because of regulations and federal government and rah, rah, rah. They'll tie you up in red tape. And you'll never get any change, and you won't be able to get any change from local council because there will be no oversight to the laws that they're making. That's what's so dangerous about giving councils constitutional recognition and the equalisation of powers. People don't really understand what the equalisation of powers is. What it means is that it makes your local councils able to create law, and this is something that we do not want. And it could only be very, very damaging to society. And it's essentially just another step towards Agenda 21, folks. That's all it is. And that's what we are seeing. They've been pushing for it for a long time. And that's what we're seeing. And we'll see similar things happening in other countries as well. Remember, they always try these things in one particular country and then they extrapolate it out around the rest of the world. That's the way they do it. It's all one big testing ground, folks. And it's all about consolidation of the corporate system that currently enslaves mankind. And we're seeing it really going ahead in leaps and bounds in the last 12 months, and it's happening in virtually every country across the planet. And just the political backflips we're seeing all around the place as well, the way we are seeing terrorist organizations suddenly being reclassified as non-terrorists, and what we've seen in Syria, we've seen this terrorist group with the links to Al-Qaeda, apparently, is now being supported by the US government so that then they can maneuver this group into power. And there they go. They've set up an Al-Qaeda-based enemy for the future when they wish to invade Syria. So you can see, folks, it's all theater. And of course, there are all eyes on America at the moment with this attack against the Second Amendment that we're seeing. Everybody is waiting to see what the outcome of this will be. Everyone's waiting to see if the American people are going to step up to the plate and whether articles of impeachment will be delivered. It really is a very, very crucial time in the world at the moment, folks. And actually, it's a very exciting time. It's very exciting and very interesting to see these types of things coming to a head and to see the changes that are happening and the potential that we have to actually take this species in the right direction, the potential we have for human empowerment, because the workings of this system are being laid so bare for all to see. It really is a pivotal time in history, folks, and I don't know about you, but I'm certainly enjoying the ride, and I think it's fascinating to see, and I think it's very empowering to be part of this whole shift and this whole transition that is currently happening. Well, folks, we're just about at the end of the show here now. Again, thank you to all of those who supported my son in his time of crisis. You really have my most sincere thanks and my most sincere blessing. Thank you to anybody who has ever made a contribution to the Crow House. That is also very much needed, and I thank you all for the support you've shown me over the years. I will give you some more information on the Full Circle Project when I'm able to do so. It's very up in the air at the moment. I'm still having meetings and working out the finer details of it, but I will know some more information soon, and when I've got that, I will get it to you as quickly as I can, and I'll let you know exactly what the process is going to be and what we have planned, but it is morphing into something quite large. But look, I'm completely out of time now, folks, so I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining me on the show today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I will look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take care until then. In Lakesh.